You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. As COVID-19 cases spread through the United States and Idaho, we want you to know that we are committed to keeping you updated and informed. Right now, as of noon on Friday, we know there are 23 confirmed cases here in our state. And you can get updated information on cases and closures and how to keep yourself healthy at any time on our coronavirus blog. Just go to BoiseStatePublicRadio.org to learn more. And now a quick note for those of you who did not tune in yesterday, day two of me hosting remotely from my house. The reason for this is really putting into practice what we preach. It is the social distancing. It is staying home as much as possible. All of our guests today will be joining us remotely as well. So please be patient with us if there are any technical issues. I got a couple of little comments on social media of folks listening, but saying the sound wasn't as great as it normally is. We are working every single day with this new technology to get that up and going. I have my fingers crossed that my kids don't come in here and start yelling, but if they do, you know, I have a feeling that we are all dealing with those issues. And since today is Friday, well, if you are a regular listener, you know that it is our Friday Reporter Roundtable, and it is important to us to bring you the news that is making headlines this week. And our guest today, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, Heath Drusen with Boise State Public Radio, Nicole Foy with the Idaho Statesman, and Aaron Bammer with the Idaho Press, all joining us live remotely. Happy Friday, everybody.
Hello, Friday. From much more than 6 feet away.
Right, exactly. I know. All right, let's just start with the very latest. And this is what is going on here in Idaho in particular with the coronavirus. So we found out yesterday during a news conference from Governor Brad Little that Blaine County's numbers had significantly increased the number of cases. They are now sitting at 16 lab confirmed cases. And Heath, can you talk a little bit about about that news conference, but also what, you know, the state of Idaho's response has been so far.
Right. Well, the state of Idaho's response really has been kind of long on advice and short on mandates. And Blaine County is an exception to that. They had a community transmission case. They've had quite a few cases. And so in that one county, they are issuing that that order for people to essentially shelter in place. That's an order that some states have just issued across the state, though, like California, for example, which has, I believe, 40 million people. Don't quote me on the exact number, but I believe that's right.
And it's a lot. Right.
And they've taken that step statewide, which is certainly extraordinary, but some people have certainly been critical of Idaho because they do seem to be taking a gamble that, you know, suggesting that certain businesses close is going to be good enough. And it's certainly been a very mixed bag across the state, whether or not restaurants and bars go to takeout and delivery only and close their dining rooms.
And let's talk a little bit more about that because, Scott, maybe you can jump in on this. Yesterday, we spoke live with Boise Mayor Lauren McClain and at noon, and she was saying she was going to be making some announcements later that afternoon when it came into regards of restaurant closures. So kind of get us updated on what the city of Boise has done.
Yeah, so she did make that announcement. McClain announced Thursday afternoon that she would order the closure of restaurants and bars for 30 days effective today. That means that people will have to use pickup, drive-through, or delivery options. Now, along with that, McClain announced that the city will close parking meters in front of downtown restaurants so those spots may be used to pick up food. Other measures that she announced during the press conference yesterday was that childcare operations and workers with licenses that expire in March or April will have their licenses extended for 8 weeks. She also announced that meetings of 17 city boards, commissions, and committees will be suspended for 30 days. So like Heath was talking about, at least 23 states across the country have ordered restaurants to close at least somewhat for dine-in patrons. And then several large cities, including New York, Miami, Washington, D.C., have similar restrictions. So Mayor McClain took a very strong position, and I think, you know, from my point of view, showed some tremendous leadership to make that move.
And we should note, too, that before she made that announcement, I believe Wednesday, the days are running together, is that she also said that if any city-owned buildings, there will be... we don't have to pay rent for the month of April. She was putting that into effect as well. And she also stated that things like sewer, water, she mentioned on our show yesterday, they're working with Sparklight even to not turn off services for people who do not have the ability to pay.
Yeah. And I spoke with a woman who is an employee at Red Lion Hotel in Boise, and she lives in one of the city apartments. These are city-owned apartments throughout the city, and they're affordable housing. She pays $420 a month in rent, and she got word from her boss that her hours going to be cut back to 12 hours a week, and she was, you know, just in despair, not knowing what she was going to do. And then the very next day, she got a letter from the city saying that your April rent is forgiven. You don't have to pay mm-hmm. April rent. And she said, she told me that she was just about in tears when she got that letter, because that meant that she was going to have a place to stay for the next month and save up rent for May.
And we should note, and Heath, maybe this goes back to that idea of maybe the state of Idaho needing to step in more, is that even though the City Council of Boise put in an emergency an emergency act so that it gave the mayor more power to be able to do things like close restaurants and things like that, she has no power when it comes to doing things like, you know, allowing, you know, small businesses to maybe have some type of tax relief right now. Also maybe taking away the 1 week waiting period for unemployment. And those are things that we have to wait and see if the state does, correct?
Right. There's no question that Idaho has really been behind the eight ball when it comes to responding to this. You know, it took a long time for us to have a confirmed case. And I think that might have given people this false sense of security that somehow no confirmed cases meant there were no cases here. And obviously there were cases where we just haven't had a lot of testing. And now that testing is ramping up, we're finding, you know, more and more cases each day, and that's to be expected. But yeah, there really hasn't been a ton of response at the state level, except for suggestions. But, you know, even those suggestions have been ignored sometimes, even by leadership. I mean, when you look at the legislature, they threw a party on Tuesday, House leadership did, when the guidance from the federal government was don't gather in groups of more than 10. So it's been, I would say it's been uneven at best as far as the response we've seen from leadership in the state.
Hey, Aaron, I'm curious to know what it is like in Canyon County right now. And I ask that because at this moment, at 12:14 on Friday, there aren't any confirmed cases in Canyon County. And we haven't heard from any of the mayors yet about any type of closures. And we should note that Mayor of Meridian, Robert Simonson, will be having a news conference at 1:30 to talk more about what they're going to be doing when it comes to restaurants and businesses. So Aaron, what's the feel in Canyon County?
I would say it's a bit more relaxed than Ada County right now, but Nampa and Caldwell leadership have kind of been closely following the trends of Boise and Meridian and what their elected officials are doing. So earlier this week, Nampa and Caldwell both declared states of emergency. In Nampa, they have announced they would be canceling or postponing all events over 250 people at the Nampa Civic Center and the Ford Idaho Center. And there's been some closures of many public spaces like the Nampa Rec Center, Nampa Library, Caldwell Library. I haven't gotten anything confirmed as to any similar announcements to what Mayor McLean did yesterday, but it's likely that something similar will follow sometime soon if the trends continue of Nampa and Caldwell following closely after Boise.
And have restaurants, any restaurants in Canyon County that you know of, Aaron, have they taken upon themselves to stop the dine-in part? Because that is something that, but that we saw in Boise was that, you know, business owners kind of took it upon themselves to start implementing CDC recommendations.
Not that I'm aware of. The feel in Canyon County seems to truly be a little bit more relaxed because there haven't been any confirmed cases in Canyon County. But I heard that Mayor Nankolas is considering loosening regulations for curbside pickup at dining establishments in Caldwell. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of days, more businesses kind of move in that direction.
Gemma, and I just got back doing interviews and reporting in Wilder and in Greenleaf and in Caldwell. And I actually just stopped and got pupusas in Caldwell because there is a couple of restaurants that I've heard of, and including this one, they are doing curbside, bring out to your car or pick up. But yeah, it's like Aaron said, there's no mandate yet. And so at the same time that some Caldwell restaurants, some Nampa restaurants are starting to do this. You know, there's a Mexican market in Wilder that still has dine-in options. All the farm workers come in from the field and sit down at the linoleum tables, and it's business as usual. So it's kind of, Canyon County is kind of just, everyone is kind of making their own decisions right now.
Well, and we should note that was the one thing, one of the things with Mayor McLean, Boise Mayor McLean, when we were talking with her, was it's needing that conformity, right, across the board when it comes to our municipalities. I mean, we all share the same air, so it doesn't matter that we're different counties. So we are continuing our conversation with how COVID-19, which is the coronavirus, is affecting Idaho. And Nicole, I wanted to talk about something that is critically important. And this really is in regards to making sure that all of Idaho's population is being informed with all of the same information. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, one of the things that we're seeing and that I'm reporting on is that we're constantly getting a huge amount of news. We're getting it to our phones, we're getting it online. There's an update every single time there's a new case, and a lot of people are following really closely. But all of this news is in English, and we have several sections of our state that have thousands of people that don't speak English or don't speak it well enough to understand terms like social distancing, shelter in place. And that's going to become a problem if we start having some more of these severe restrictions placed on everyday life. And frankly, when you're dealing with a public health crisis like this, a pandemic, how are you supposed to stop the spread of a virus that passes from person to person if not everyone has all of the accurate and updated information about that virus, about how to prevent it, because it hasn't been put out in their language? So it's kind of a developing issue.
Well, yeah. Well, and it's something I have to say, Nicole, in all honesty, that I think it is something that many people who do not, you know, who English is their first language, that may not be on top of mind. But as you mentioned, we have a large community of Spanish-speaking individuals that also need that same information. So the Idaho Statesman and Channel 6, aren't you? You are coming together, correct, to make sure that information is getting out?
Yeah, we're doing our best. We have a live blog with Spanish updates where we kind of do our best to just compile things at the end of the day, you know, with all of the news that happens. And sometimes when it's things like what happened in Blaine County yesterday with the spike in cases, there's a lot of new information to go out. But the difficult thing is that this is happening across the state, and local health districts, local government agencies are all giving different instructions to their cities, because of course, what's required in Blaine County may not be required out in Caldwell quite yet. And so it's really important that that information gets out to people who need it. And so what we're kind of seeing is different nonprofit organizations and service providers who usually work with these populations who don't speak English sufficiently to understand important healthcare information. They're kind of trying to do their best and cobble together some plans and some outreach plans. Some are doing a really wonderful job. I sat in on a information session with at the International Rescue Committee, where they had four languages going at the same time in a room full of 40 people. This was, you know, back a week ago before we could be in a room with more than 40 people. Just explaining what the coronavirus is. What you should know about it. Why should you be staying away from people? And I spoke with a woman through a translator afterwards. She speaks Swahili. She had recently come to the United States, and so she's still taking English classes. And she told me that until she went into this information session, she obviously knew a lot about the coronavirus. She knew it was dangerous. She knew people were dying. She had no local information, and that's really crucial because local agencies, as we've just been talking about with Boise shutting down restaurants and Canyon County still kind of coming to terms with what they're going to do, they have a significant amount of power right now. And they also have very specific language needs that need to be addressed in order to make sure everyone has the information we need to keep each other safe. I mean, Blaine County is a great example. Roughly 30% of that county, I think more in some places, speak Spanish. There's a lot of Latino families, Latino immigrant families who work up there in the service industry. And it's really important that that information gets out in Spanish. And actually the Blaine County Commissioners, I saw this right before we got on, they did a joint press release that is one of the first I have seen since this started a week ago, that went out fully in Spanish. I don't know what kind of outreach plans they're doing with that, but they understand that it's important to get this information out to the community, because again, we're all in it together. And if our neighbors don't have the information that they need to stay safe, that could be a problem.
And Heath, that kind of goes back to what you were saying in the very beginning of our reporter roundtable, is not having that uniformity from the state. As Nicole just mentioned, I mean, it's not the same information in Blaine County as it is in Canyon County.
No, it's not. And it's, yeah, it's been very inconsistent across the state. And, you know, even leadership has really kind of deferred to local health agencies. When Megan Blanksma, she's the Republican caucus chair in the House, she was asked if they were going to suggest that House members who are, you know, about to head out to all corners of the state after being essentially, you know, doing the business of the state legislature, which kind of goes against all CDC recommendations. She was asked if they're going to get tested. And her response was essentially, we'll defer to local health agencies and their recommendations. But I think a lot of local folks are looking to the state for some guidance. And I think at best, it's been very, very mixed.
Mm-hmm. Scott, another thing that's I think caused some confusion is testing. And Audrey Dutton, one of your reporters at The Statesman, wrote a piece today about this. Can you talk a little bit more about that as well?
Yeah, this is really interesting because testing is kind of at the tip of the spear for this. And the state government does its own testing. The Idaho Bureau of Laboratories does its own testing in its own state lab, but it can only run about 60 tests a day. And so because of that limited capacity, the Bureau of Laboratories this week told healthcare providers that it will no longer run tests at the Boise lab for patients who are not hospitalized or are not deemed high priority for public health purposes. So they're going to be testing only folks who are hospitalized or high priority for public health purposes. So that means that all other samples, these are samples from doctor's offices or urgent care clinics or drive-through testing sites, must now be sent to commercial labs elsewhere. But what's happening is that these samples are being sent to large commercial laboratories in other states like Washington, Colorado, California, even further afield across the country. But Audrey Dutton spoke to a local Dr. Ryan Cole, a local pathologist who owns Cole Diagnostics in Garden City, and he told her that he has a machine, a testing machine that could test up to 400 tests a day if he were able to staff up around the clock operations. But what's happening is that the company Roche Diagnostics Corporation that runs this machine has not prioritized our location to service that machine to provide software and reagents that could be used to test for COVID-19. So that is a machine sitting right here in Garden City that could be testing 400 tests a day, and it's just being unused.
And we can read that entire article on the Idaho Statesman's website. But therein, and I think, Scott, that's where maybe some of this fear comes in and everything, is that it's the question of, well, why aren't we able to get these tests? And, you know, this gives us some insight into that.
Yeah, it just shows that we really were not prepared for this. You know, if we had started ramping up, you know, so Ryan Cole said that Roche Diagnostics told him that it would take about 30 to 45 days before they could come service his machine. Well, why didn't we plan for that back in December? Why didn't Roche send somebody out in December and say, okay, 30, 45 days from now, we're talking February, you'd be ready to go. And so that did not happen. So I think this is just another indication that we were totally unprepared for this.
And another issue that we're seeing is, Heath, this run on guns because of, once again, this kind of panic that is overtaking people.
Yeah, this has been seen not only in Idaho, but all over the country. A lot of folks have been lining up to buy guns. And it's been a mix, apparently, of people who already have guns, and they're getting more guns, and then a lot of first-time buyers as well. And as you said, you know, people are afraid. There's a lot of unknowns, and they seem to be worried about, you know, about if things get worse, then maybe they'll have to protect themselves. So yeah, it's been going on all over the country. On the flip side of that, while these gun stores have been, you know, selling out and even having to ration certain kinds of guns, the part of the gun industry that's not doing well is gun shows. As you can imagine, a lot of those have been shut down. They tend to bring a lot of people into a small space at once. So a lot of gun shows are on hold across the country. So it's been kind of a mixed bag.
Mm. And Scott, and in some emails back and forth, that you actually attended a gun show, correct, back on March 9th for some reporting, and you noticed a drop?
Oh, I was there. I wasn't there for reporting. I was there for my own personal interest. I've gone to a couple gun shows, and I went to a gun show in December. I think it was November, December last year at the Ford Idaho Center, and it was pretty jam-packed. And then when I went back to the next one on March 9th, and this was, you know, March 9th was, you know, about a week before the panic started to hit, I would say, you know, attendance and vendors were down by about half. You know, that's just kind of an anecdotal observation. But there, you know, there was no panic then. I think that if they had held the gun show a week later, perhaps there would have been a little more attendance, but on March 9th, there was not a lot of people there.
Well, on March 9th seems like a lifetime ago, but only 11 days, crazy enough. Aaron, we should talk a little bit about schools, because this is something that school districts all over the state are dealing with. Most school districts in the state of Idaho, I believe, are going into spring break come next week. However, most school districts also stopped classes this week. And now it is, all right, what do we do after spring break? But you've been talking with the school district in Canyon County, correct?
Yeah, I've talked a little bit to people I know that work for the West Ada School District as well. And the problem is that, like, spring break has come at kind of a convenient time, so people can kind of quarantine for the time being, but this is going to last well after spring break is over. So a lot of school districts are trying to figure out, well, what do we do once spring break is finished? And the responses have been varied, to say the least. I think weirdly, Nampa School District seems pretty prepared because they already implemented long before this, one device per student system, even for their elementary students. So each student has their own laptop or tablet, so they can transition seemingly pretty easily into online classes after spring break is done. But other school districts don't have that luxury. I've heard from West Ada and Valley View that they simply don't have the resources to transition into online classes for every single student after spring break. So I'm still not sure what they're going to do, but they've got to figure it out and fast.
Well, and that is a great point, Erin, that there are school districts that just do not have the funding to be able to have every student have some type of device. Yet there is but constitutionally you have to have a certain number of school days. So This could potentially be another big problem for certain school districts around our state.
Yeah, absolutely. West Ada, I've just, from what I've heard, they're the biggest school district in the state, and they simply just have too many students to be able to give devices to every single student. But at this point, if nothing significant happens, we're not going to be at a place where they can just reopen schools and let people come back. And so we haven't really heard anything. Every school district seems to be going kind of on a week-to-week basis on what our plan is going to be. So we're kind of in limbo right now.
Our guest today, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, Heath Drusen with Boise State Public Radio, Nicole Foy with Idaho Statesman, and Erin Bammer with the Idaho Press. We did mention a little bit ago about the legislature and that they have now wrapped up. But Heath, as you had mentioned earlier, they were basically refusing to go home, even though I believe 21 other states who were in session did.
That's right. There were a lot of states around the country that postponed their legislative sessions or postponed one house or the other in response to COVID-19. Abby, as you can imagine, you've got a legislature in session. Not only do you have the legislators in close proximity to each other, you've got a lot of staff members as well. You've got visitors. It's kind of everything the CDC is asking us not to do. And so there's a lot of concern there about the legislature possibly being an incubator for spreading this disease. And I think that's heightened by the fact that you have legislators from every corner of Idaho and every county in Idaho, and now they're going to be heading back to their districts. I had mentioned Megan Blanksma before, the caucus chair for the House GOP. And, in response to this, asking about testing, she actually had a quote that said, "There are plenty of infectious diseases we could be testing for. How much do you want to test for? Do you want to test everyone everywhere they go? I mean, there's a limit for what you can test for." The fact is, though, there's one pandemic going on right now.
So right.
There is a particular thing to test for, and I don't know how realistic it is to test everyone in the legislature before they go home, but certainly.
Yeah, but Heath, not to interrupt you, but we should note that there were three legislators that went to that CPAC convention back east where there were confirmed cases of coronavirus, and Governor Little confirmed that those three legislators refused to be tested, and the session continued.
That's correct. And we still don't really know any details about how close they were to the person who did test positive at CPAC, if they had interactions. It's unclear. There's a lot we don't know. And as we've seen, certainly politicians are not immune to this virus. In fact, quite the opposite. And we've already seen a couple U.S. House members test positive. And there's been some real close proximity, even up to the president, for people who have tested positive. Mm-hmm.
So, Scott, though, before they did wrap up the session, they were able to do a couple of things. Talk to us about where the bill was for a license plate that would have given people the option to have a license plate that said Idaho is too great for hate.
Yeah, this is really kind of bizarre. It was the final vote of the session. And I think some people, particularly on the Democratic side, think that's fitting. But the Idaho House killed a bill to create an Idaho Too Great for Hate license plate. The vote happened while the Senate was still in session across the rotunda, and senators were making their farewell speeches and honoring retiring senators, including Senator Sheree Buckner Webb, who sponsored the license plate bill. The bill would have benefited the Anne Frank Memorial Wasmuth Center for Human Rights in Boise. And this is like license plates that you see that benefit wildlife and other organizations. And it kind of went through a complicated process. It was a similar bill was introduced last session and died in Representative Joe Palmer's committee. And then it was reintroduced again this year, this session, and went through the same process, except this year, Joe Palmer did introduce it and brought it forward, and the committee moved it ahead and allowed it to go to the floor kind of in the last minute. And then at the very last 11th hour of the session, this was the last bill that they voted to kill. It has a couple of interesting elements to it. One is that we had five legislators who were absent because of coronavirus fears, and those five were Democrats who likely would have voted for the bill. And so if they had been present, the bill likely would have passed. At the end of the session, Cynthia Sewell asked the leadership, the GOP leadership, why the bill died, and the four Republican leaders said that they all voted for it, and so they couldn't speak for why it died. So it was just, it might be one of those kind of, we're going to snub you infighting, political infighting at the end of the session. Who knows? We haven't heard from anybody. There was no debate on the floor as to why they would kill it. But it just, it's another kind of bad look for our legislature.
Well, and Scott, not to interrupt, but
go ahead, Heath.
Our colleague Jimmy Dawson actually covered this, and he noted that all but one of the panhandle legislators in an area where Idaho's really had a bad reputation because of the history of the Aryan Nations up there, all but one of them actually voted against the license plate.
And we should also note very quickly, there has been this transgender athlete bill in the State House. And Scott, something really interesting happened regarding five of the five living Idaho attorneys general.
Right. Yeah. So earlier this week, the Statesman received a letter signed by the past five attorneys general urging Governor Little to veto House Bill 500A. This is the bill that essentially bans transgender girls and women from participating in girls and women's sports. And the letter was an open letter to Governor Little. And it was signed by Tony Park, who was Attorney General in 1971 to 1975, Wayne Kidwell after him, David Leroy after him, Jim Jones from 83 to 91, and Al Lance from 95 to 2003, which brings us up to the start of the current Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin, whose office has also weighed in on the bill, saying the bill has legal problems and would have difficulty withstanding a legal challenge. So you've got essentially 50 years worth of attorneys general all saying this legislation should be vetoed. And in addition, Betsy Russell of the Idaho Press reported today that the Duke University law professor, whose work is cited three times in the bill, she herself said the bill sponsored misrepresented her research and the bill shouldn't become law. She said, quote, "No other state has enacted such a flat prohibition against transgender athletes, and Idaho shouldn't either." So there's just a lot of opposition to that bill and a lot of pressure on Governor Little to veto it. In addition, four major Idaho employers, Chobani, Clif Bar, HP, and Micron, they all signed a letter hand-delivered to Little's office Thursday afternoon urging a veto as well.
Because that's where it's at, correct, Scott, is that it is now lying in the hands of Governor Little.
Correct. And Governor Little has, he's up in Blaine County today, and he's going to be touring the all the health districts in the state. And so he has said that looking at legislation has not been the top of his list right now, but he will get to it at some point.
We did not get to everything today, but I want to thank all of you for joining us remotely and getting us updated on the very latest. Some of this information we want to note to all of our listeners could change come our rebroadcast at 8 p.m. tonight. We do broadcast live at noon, so some of those numbers could be changing. Some restrictions could be changing. So be aware to go to our blog. We are keeping that updated live at Boise State Public Radio. .org. So you can do that, as well as all of our colleagues at the Idaho Statesman, at the Idaho Press. They are also keeping you up to date. So I want to thank our roundtable today, Scott McIntosh with the Idaho Statesman, Heath Rusin with Boise State Public Radio, Aaron Bammer with the Idaho Press, and Nicole Foy with the Idaho Statesman. Hey, try to have a good weekend with all of this, guys, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more Idaho Matters right after this.